welcome to another episode of This Week in Sports. I'm your host, as always, The Pody. It is Friday, January 19th, 2024. And we've got a nice, easy, brisk sort of episode. Lot to unpack here in the past week, but got a nice snow day here in Jersey in the Northeast. Got pounded with some snow. Nothing like you saw in Buffalo, of course, but it allowed us to have off today. So I had off on Monday for Martin Luther King Jr. I had off on Tuesday for a snow day and off on Friday for a snow day. So only went to work on Wednesday and Thursday. Nice, easy weekend, or week, if you will, and now get a nice little four-day weekend as well, yet again. Although this will most likely fall, we'll have to make up this day because we're out of snow days, so it'll most likely fall in the spring break there, which kind of sucks, but we'll worry about that in a couple months when we cross that bridge. Okay, like I said, a lot to unpack. We're going to start with the NFL and obviously Super Wild Card Weekend, the playoffs, all that jazz. But first, this is sort of breaking news, if you will. I don't know how many of my listeners care, but I'm assuming a lot of you do because you know, if you're listening to a sports show, then you care about your sports. Well, not too long ago, it was just announced about an hour ago, Sports Illustrated is no more. At least that's what it sounds like. Sports Illustrated released a statement that they have essentially fired their entire staff at Sports Illustrated. So, of course, when you think Sports Illustrated, you think of the magazine, all the cool covers. That was the cream of the crop was Sports Illustrated. If you were on the cover of Sports Illustrated, think, you know, LeBron James, you know, just all the greats, Yankees teams, you know, Tiger Woods, just et cetera, just all the greatest players and teams and the covers of SI. And of course, then you've got Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition that has been at the peak and at the top for years upon years upon years, so much so my dad has covers because he subscribed to Sports Illustrated in paper form and magazine form before we started to get it on Apple News and everything and digitally. And he has folders full of the paper covers. The most famous one, you know, that resonates with me the most Sports Illustrated wise with their cover was the Eric LeGrand one in the snow when he was coming out onto the field after he was paralyzed, which that was a game that I was at and he recently spoke at the school I work at. But yeah, that one resonates with me the most. I have that magazine somewhere in my room. I have that picture on my phone. It's crazy, right? To think that Sports Illustrated is now going to cease to exist. They had some of the best articles in sports. And I don't know, maybe sort of the Athletic has started to take over a little bit there. I'm not so sure what has spawned this. I know it's been a new ownership group the last, I think, 4 years. They said it's been a struggle to keep things going. So this is crazy. But this news just broke about an hour ago. It's, what, 2:30 here on the East Coast. So about 1:30, I saw Adam Schefter tweeted about this. He retweeted Sports Illustrated's statement. And then he even went on to say, which is super true, at its peak, and even for a while after Sports Illustrated was an institution, its covers, which I just mentioned, and coverage, again, the articles, were legendary. So much great work was done there, and now it's the end. A horrible day for the employees that work there. Yeah, I'm actually shocked by this. I know in this day and age with digital and with Twitter and everything else, you name it, but I'm a little surprised by that because, again, I subscribe to Sports Illustrated through Apple News Plus, so they're still very highly regarded in the digital space. So I don't know what spawned this, but I feel bad for all the employees that just lost their jobs. I'm sure that you know they'll be fine and they'll get jobs elsewhere. But yeah, that is staggering news. So I just wanted to share that because, again, that just came out about an hour ago. Okay, with that being said, let's jump in and talk Super Wild Card Weekend. So first up, let's just totally forget and ignore everything I said last weekend about the Cleveland Browns and possibly being a decent team to bet to make it or to win the AFC with that vaunted stud defense led by Myles Garrett and that secondary. Well, my God, could I have not been more wrong? And again, I feel like I'm broken record at this point, but it's not often that I'm this wrong, and I feel like I've now had to say that at least three times this season. So it's been tough. But yeah, Joe Flacco threw back-to-back pick sixes. I totally disagreed. They were down 17 with a few minutes left in the third. I did not think the game was officially over. Obviously, Kevin Stefanski did and went for it after the first pick six, immediately thereafter on like a fourth and two or fourth and three from his own side of the ball, and that's when Flacco threw his second pick six. So I think they should have punted there. I was total, you know, it's hindsight, obviously, but in the moment, if you were there with me, I was saying I don't agree with this call. I thought they should have punted the ball there. So that just ended any hope that they had of coming back. And I should have known. I should have been wary. You know, Joe Flacco has been a great comeback story off the couch to starter. They've used five different starters throughout this season and made the playoffs as the five seed. And they had the number one defense in the league. And they're playing a rookie coach, a rookie quarterback, and a rookie neophyte offensive coordinator. And who, by the way, Slovic has been getting head coaching interviews, which I'd be hesitant. I would not hire him right now as a head coach. And if I were him, Bobby Slowick, I think that I would stay with CJ Stroud and try to build this thing for a couple more years and, refine my offensive play calling and gain a little bit more experience. And I don't think it would be the right time now for a team to hire him. I think he still needs a few more years to mature. Not to say that he won't be great, but I just think right now it would be a disservice to him and whichever team if he were to go out and get a head coaching job. So I thought for all these reasons, neophyte coach, quarterback, offensive coordinator, that they would finally run into a buzzsaw and lose. Great story. You know, won the AFC South. DeMeco Ryans is going to be the coach of the year, right? And they did not sack C.J. Stroud one time. He threw for over 230 yards in the first half alone, which was the most the Browns had given up all season. And I think that after this performance by that defense, I think Jim Schwartz should have been fired. He has not been, not to say he can't still be, but that time has come and gone, really, with coaches being fired. So a little surprising at how bad they were. That was so bad that the final score was 45-14. So I basically, burned $100, totally flushed it down the drain. That was absolutely brutal. But I did make up for it somewhat with my Tua over 0.5 interceptions in the Miami-Kansas City game, which, by the way, they moved the Buffalo game to Monday because of the snow, but they couldn't move the Kansas City game with temperatures under 0 degrees, the fourth coldest game in NFL history, so much so that over 10 people, I think like a dozen or more people, were hospitalized because of this. And I'm seeing Miami fans, like a dude had his shirt off. Like, you have to be stupid. You have to understand, the temperatures are so cold that you could die, dude. The temperatures were so cold that the freezers and the refrigerators or coolers, whatever you want to call them, you know, when you like go into a convenience store and you go to the back refrigerated area to get a drink or like a Gatorade or water out of the little fridge, the door, those were acting as, like, those were keeping the beverages warm at that point, because there was videos that when they took a water out of that fridge, It immediately froze. Immediately. Beers were like exploding in the aluminum cans. It was insanely cold. And they played this game anyway. It was so cold that Patrick Mahomes scrambled and took a hit to the helmet. And his helmet cracked. And basically pieces went flying off the helmet because it was so cold. Like, that's not something that's normally supposed to happen. But yes, it was that cold, and Tua did throw an interception actually quite early, so I recouped most of my money, thank God, which was a pretty easy bet there. But this went about as expected, exactly how I saw it playing out. I should have just taken, you know, Kansas City with the points. That was the most obvious bet, and I didn't. But final score was... what was the final score? Like 26-7, 23-6, something like 26-7. Yeah. This was also the breakout game, the Rashee Rice game. He went off 8 receptions, 130 yards, and a touchdown. Isaiah Pacheco was fine. He had like 20 carries, 80 something yards, and he punched one in two. And listen, this was a 3-seeded Kansas City team. I did not expect Miami to win this game. Quite frankly, they lost this game a week ago when they lost the division to the Bills, you know, at the end of that game. So, again, not surprising. This is now a Miami Dolphins team that, unfortunately, they now own the distinction of having the longest active streak without a playoff win. Their last playoff win came 23 years ago. Or almost 24 years ago now, in the year 2000. And they went 1-6 this year against playoff teams. The lone win coming against the Dallas Cowboys, a 22-20 win a few weeks ago, which, by the way, that proved to be a fraudulent win because the Cowboys got their asses handed to them. More on that in just a few minutes. The Lions ended their drought, their playoff drought. That's why the Dolphins now own the longest drought. Okay, for the Lions, I was wrong on this one too. They edged the Rams. I thought the Rams would win this one. I did not realize Sam Laporta was going to be healthy and playing. I thought they had some, you know, injuries that would cost them, and that was not the case. They beat the Rams 24-23 in the first playoff game in Detroit that Detroit has hosted in 30 years. I mentioned that. This was the first playoff win for the Detroit Lions in my lifetime. I'm 31. I'll be 32 in May. That is insane. We saw Detroit fans crying in the stands, especially that one white guy who I later saw an interview with him and whatnot. He was obviously born and bred, raised in Detroit, and his brother surprised him with tickets to this game, which, by the way, were very expensive, the most expensive in wild card history. And he went to the game. He was emotional because his dad... you know, he grew up with his dad as a Lions fan, and his dad, unfortunately, when he was 35 years old, when the kid was very young, his car, he got killed in a car accident. His car went under a semi-truck, and he was killed. And so this was just him, you know, thinking to, you know, up to, you know, to the heavens, to his father. It was a cool story. If you have a chance to go see the interview or go see his story, it was emotional. He does not have tickets to the divisional round playoff game. He could not get tickets, and I'm sure they're expensive. So I know people were looking to try to get him tickets because it's just an emotional, cool story. And, you know, all of Detroit, you know, I'm sure was elated with this win. And, you know, Dan Campbell, how could you not root for this guy? How could you not root for this team? Of course, Jared Goff was an extremely efficient 22 of 27 for 277 yards and a touchdown. And Dan Campbell's the right man for this job. He's the epitome of Detroit, a Texas football, old school type of guy. I've been a fan of his ever since he took over as interim coach with the Miami Dolphins a number of years ago. Just awesome. Like, you want to run through a wall for this guy. So I'm rooting for the Lions. Jared Goff, a castaway from that LA Rams team, right? Took them to that Super Bowl, was not able to win it against the Patriots. That was like the lowest scoring Super Bowl in history. It was like 13-6 or something. Tom Brady's last with the Patriots. And they said, no, Jared Goff is not good enough. They traded for Stafford, shipped Goff to the doldrums of Detroit. Well, in just a few short years, Jared Goff has them at the top of the echelon, winning the NFC North for the first time in, you know, like 30 years as well, and just getting them back to glory. And, you know, listen, they're in a very good position. They'll play the Buccaneers. I'll preview that game a little bit later. And I think they're going to win that game. And I think they have a date in the NFC Championship awaiting them. As for the Rams, Puka Nacua, he went off for 181 yards in his playoff debut. Of course, just coming off a rookie record for receptions and receiving yards in a season. Well, this is now a new rookie playoff record in a debut. And listen, Sean McVay is a very good coach. I think what he's done with this team this year has been phenomenal. The last couple of years, they've really spiraled downhill, and there's talks that he wasn't going to come back, yada, yada, yada. They did a very good job. However, I thought his decision, and they've won a Super Bowl in the last couple of years. Stafford won them a Super Bowl, so he's a Super Bowl-winning coach. I thought that decision to punt it at the end of the game, it was like, what, 4th and 4 or so. They were close enough to the 50. I thought that was the game, the ball game there. I thought they should have gone for it because, of course, they punted and then they never got the ball back. Jared Goff hit Amon-Ra and they got the first down and they were able to kneel it out. So I thought that was a bit sketchy and I did not like that play call. I didn't get to see any interviews afterwards with McVay, but I would have loved to hear his reasoning behind that and his decision making because they lost by 1 and it cost them the game, unfortunately. The shocker of the weekend, without question, right, was the Dallas Cowboys at home in Jerry World, and they fell down 27-0. I thought that Matt LaFleur's decision to win that coin toss and say, we want to receive the ball, that took guts, that took a whole lot of cojones, and boy, did it pan off and pan out because Jordan Love, who, by the way, has been one of the best quarterbacks in the league since about week 13, drove his team methodically all the way down the field, converting multiple third downs and scrambles, and Dallas was not bringing pressure or just couldn't get to Jordan Love, and they scored a touchdown. Aaron Jones ran it in, and that set the tone for the game, and they quickly, within the blink of a few eyes, went up 27-0. It was actually 48-16 in the fourth quarter. The final score, you know, was 48-32. Don't let that fool you. This game was not close by any stretch, and it's typical Cowboys, typical Mike McCarthy at home against your former team. You need to win this game the way the Packers won it. So, I mean, this was just brutal. So Dak once again proved he can't win when it matters most, threw a couple interceptions, 3 straight 12-win seasons for the Cowboys, and nothing to show for it. They haven't made an NFC Championship game appearance since 1995. By comparison, the Jets, who have the longest playoff drought in the NFL at 13 years, have 2 championship game appearances and 6 playoff wins to the Cowboys' 4. It's staggering. It is absolutely staggering. And again, Matt LaFleur, I think he's one of the top 5 best coaches in the NFL right now. Look at what he did, okay? In the first year since moving on from Aaron Rodgers, he makes the playoffs and wins a road playoff game with a first-year starting quarterback in Jordan Love. I mean, you got to give him credit, man. Now, there was a lot of ups and downs. I think they started the season 2-6, and everyone was ready to write them off, and then they got hot. They finished 9-8. They got in as the 7th seed, but they missed the playoffs last year with Rodgers. So now to move on from Rodgers, and then it looks like, you know, they made the right move because obviously Aaron Rodgers tore his Achilles four plays into the season, and the Jets fell flat on their faces, finishing 7-9 and missing the playoffs, right? So give credit where credit is due. He starts off his career as a head coach with the Packers with 3 straight 13-win seasons. I don't think anybody's done that. Then, again, they went 8-9 last year with Rodgers, now back to 9-8. So to finish above 500, 3 of 4 seasons and make the playoffs 3 of 4 years, and I know they made NFC Championship game at least twice, so he's close. They're close. And it's just, it's frustrating as a Jets fan, and I'm sure as fans of other teams that are not as good, but to reload three times with three quarterbacks that look like studs, you go from Brett Favre to transition to Aaron Rodgers to now Jordan Love. I mean, the Jets haven't had a good quarterback in their history besides Joe Namath. I mean, we've been chasing greatness. Imagine if the Jets had, Rex Ryan made a good point, C.J. Stroud was the first rookie quarterback to win a playoff game since Mark Sanchez. No disrespect to Mark Sanchez, but could you imagine if Rex Ryan had C.J. Stroud as his quarterback? We would have won two straight Super Bowls. I have no doubt about that. So it's just, it's hard for me to fathom how some of these teams just get so, I don't know if luck is the right word, but they just get so fortunate, I'll say, to have these quarterbacks when my team has been searching for a quarterback essentially my whole life. Yeah, we had Testaverde for a bit. We had Chad Pennington, who was probably the best in my lifetime. I'm just hoping that next year is the year Rodgers comes back healthy. We make the trade for Davante Adams because obviously we know Garrett Wilson changed his number from 17 to 5 back to his college number, leaving open the door for, you know, number 17 is Devontae's number. Hopefully we can get him and shore up that offensive line. But yeah, my God, Cowboys, how does this happen? Okay, the Bills-Steelers game was moved to Monday. I think I mentioned that already due to brutal snow conditions in Buffalo. I actually saw that there was no assigned seats. Just find a seat. Anybody that had tickets, walk into the stadium and find a seat because they had volunteers shoveling snow out of that stadium because it was insane. And they never could have played on Sunday, that's for sure. So they moved it to Monday, which was a smart thing to do. This one had a lot of similar feels to Chiefs-Dolphins. Now, granted, I think I get a pass on the Browns because I also did say that I think the Bills are the hottest team in the AFC, and I think they were another great bet to go to the Super Bowl out of the AFC. They took care of business here against the Steelers. The Steelers were really bad early on, really bad. They turned the ball over two or three times. One of them definitely should have been a turnover on a fumble that they said was out of bounds, whatever. Mason Rudolph threw the interception in the end zone, which was kind of brutal. That kind of really took any hope out of a competitive game. But they hung around a little bit. It was a good effort, valiant effort. Bills in the end win it 31-17. Not really too much to talk about there. So, we'll just move on. Josh Allen had an unbelievable touchdown run. Dalvin Cook, they've started to establish themselves with that ground game, something they haven't had with in the Josh Allen era, and give Joe Brady, interim offensive coordinator Joe Brady, a lot of credit. He has been very, very good since he took over play calling. In the final game of Super Wild Card Weekend, it was the 9-8 Buccaneers hosting the 11-6 Eagles, who limped into the playoffs after starting 10-1. Remember, only team in history to start 10-1 and not get to 12 wins. And unfortunately, A.J. Brown not available in this game, and it proved to be costly. Over the last month or so, really since November, the Eagles have been awful. One win, and it was against the Giants. And we don't know what the case is, what's going on, or what was wrong with this team. If it was something in the locker room, players not getting along, the coaching staff, something. But it was like there's a cancer running rampant, and they're going to need to cut it. And whether that's getting rid of Sirianni or maybe even Hurts, I don't know. But something has got to give because they were awful in this game. They did not try, and they got embarrassed by journeyman, let's call it what it is, journeyman quarterback Baker Mayfield, who has now won a playoff game with two different teams. It's crazy. a guy that I didn't even expect to be the starter for the entire season. I thought Kyle Trask would eventually take over. I thought Baker would be bad, but he's been pretty darn good. And they got in as division winners of that NFC South. And now they are going on the road to take on the Detroit Lions. They are 6.5-point underdogs. I do think this could be a little bit closer than expected, but I just think that the Lions are going to get the win. I mean, it really bothers me that Todd Bowles now has not only won a Super Bowl as a defensive coordinator, but he's won a playoff game as a head coach of the Buccaneers, a team that's not even that good, and he couldn't do anything with my New York Jets when he was head coach here. So, unbelievable. But yeah, to lose 32-9 to the Buccaneers, what happened to the NFC East? I mean, the Cowboys and Eagles were two of the better teams all year. What happened? And they're both bounced by lesser teams in the first round. Oof, in wild card weekend. Just sad. Sad, sad, sad. But not many people outside of Philadelphia or Dallas sad at all. The whole world relishing in their misery. Okay. Also, Jason Kelce probably retiring. They're all pro center. So, and the icing on the cherry on the cake here, was the fact that the Buccaneers stuffed the Eagles not once but twice on their unstoppable brotherly shove. Says all, everything right there. Okay, in other news, Caleb Williams finally announcing he is entering the NFL draft. No surprise there. I know there's been a lot of speculation and rumors that he wants no part of Chicago, who obviously they own that number one pick via the trade that the Panthers made to move up to number one last year to get Bryce Young. However, the Bears just made an interesting, just had an interesting interview for their open offensive coordinator position. They interviewed former Cardinals head coach Cliff Kingsbury, who, by the way, was Caleb Williams' quarterback coach and senior offensive analyst at USC this past year. So that could be their way of trying to mend fences or kind of bring Cliff Kingsbury in. They haven't hired him yet, but maybe they bring him in and that gives them the opportunity to go after Caleb Williams. But then again, we don't know if Justin Fields is going to be traded or not. Are they going to move on from Justin Fields? They went 7-9 again this year. My guess is they do move on from him, eventually trading him to, say, maybe Atlanta, which is right now a hot destination and probably the odds-on favorite to land Bill Belichick, who they did interview recently. They interviewed both Belichick and Harbaugh for that job. It'd be very interesting. It seems like Belichick wants to stay somewhere a little mediocre, if you will. I don't know why, but I do think it's an interesting thought process. Go to a team that's not totally established, because if there was rumors, oh, go to the Cowboys or the Eagles. No, he wants to take a team from nothing and build them up and prove once again why he is so good. And you have a young core, you have a Kyle Pitts, you have a Bijan Robinson. They're just about a quarterback short. But the key, in my opinion, is that division. They are in a very winnable division. The Buccaneers won that division at 9-8. The Atlanta Falcons could have beat the Saints in that final game, got to 8-9, and then a loss by the Buccaneers in the final week, and they would have been in, right? So that division is up for grabs, and all you need is a quarterback. So does he go to Atlanta? Does Atlanta trade for Justin Fields, and then he rolls the dice with Justin Fields? I don't know, but it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. All right, in college football, so Kalen DeBoer, the new head coach at Alabama, he is bringing his offensive coordinator from Washington, Ryan Grubb, with him. No surprise there. He also just hired a new defensive coordinator in South Alabama head coach Kane Womack, who he worked with at Indiana. And Womack had great recruiting ties in the area. And for a guy in DeBoer who has none, essentially, in the Southeast, went from the Big Ten to, obviously, the Pac-12 in Washington. That's pretty far away. So this was a big factor. They also did not stop there. They hired another head coach in Buffalo head coach Maurice Linguist as a defensive assistant. And unfortunately, though, for Alabama and DeBoer right now, everybody and their mother has entered the transfer portal at Alabama. They all want out, including the top the top quarterback in the freshman class, who is now entering the portal, and I'll be very keen to see where he goes because it's kind of late and a lot of teams are already established. So I'm going to be very, very curious to see where he goes. Speaking of Washington, with DeBoer out, Washington needed a new head coach. That's where Arizona's Jed Fish comes into play. He is your new Washington head coach. He was at Arizona for the past 3 years, really turned that program around. They went 0-5 in the COVID 2020 season, and he brought them to a 10-win season in 2023. They had a 7-game win streak to end the year, culminating in a 38-24 win over Oklahoma in the Alamo Bowl. And I believe it was only the fourth double-digit win season in Arizona football history. So, it's a good job for Fish. Obviously, now that Fish is out at Arizona, we saw 9 players at Arizona enter the transfer portal in 30 minutes. Just let that sink in for a second. Ohio State announced today or yesterday they are hiring former Patriots offensive coordinator, Texans head coach, and Penn State head coach Bill O'Brien as their new offensive coordinator. I'm not a fan of Bill O'Brien. I call him Bill No'Brien. I thought he was terrible with the Texans, whatever. But as an offensive coordinator, I think he's pretty good. This will be a good job for him at Ohio State. He's been at Alabama before, as he probably will try to get another head coaching job in the future. And also, they're looking for some change, too, right? 3 straight losses to Michigan, and they lost their quarterback. Of course, they brought in Howard from Kansas State. So I think this is actually a very good move for them. All right, and speaking of Michigan, let's talk Jim Harbaugh for a second. Will he stay? Won't he stay? Odds are he's going to the NFL. He's already interviewed for at least 2 jobs, the Chargers and the Falcons. However, in recent days, he's been in discussions with Michigan on a contract extension. According to Yahoo, he's also seeking language in his contract that would grant him immunity from termination from any of the current investigations into Michigan. This just sounds like a whole lot of him leveraging one over the other and just trying to get the best contract and the best amount of money and the best deal for him. So, I don't know. Maybe he wants to leave. Maybe he doesn't. Who knows? That's just something to monitor. I personally think his best interest would be to jump ship and go to the NFL. He's not a guy that stays in one place for very long. I know he played at Michigan, but the Chargers is a very tempting job, and I'm sure he wants to work with a young quarterback in Justin Fields, and I think he could do some damage there. Okay, how about this story? Miami tight end Cam McCormick was granted a 9th year of eligibility. Yes, you heard that correctly. A 9th year of eligibility.
Oh my God.
So just listen to this incredible story. McCormick began his career at Oregon in 2016. Then he proceeded to miss significant parts of 4 seasons due to injury, which, along with his redshirt year and the COVID year in 2020, allowed him to petition the NCAA for an unprecedented 9th season of eligibility. I read about this yesterday. Incredible. He's 25. He was originally a 3-star prospect out of Bend, Oregon. So he's from Oregon. That's why he went to Oregon. He was part of the 2016 signing class at Oregon that included Justin Herbert, and a national class that included the likes of Nick Bosa, Ed Oliver, Rashawn Gary, and Jalen Hurts. All established guys, obviously Herbert as well, that are in the NFL right now. So after he redshirted as a true freshman in 2016, he played in 13 games as a reserve in 2017, but then a bevy of injuries, a broken leg in 2018, followed by complications, I guess, from that injury that cost him the next 2 seasons, 2019 and 2020. He then suffered a foot injury 2 weeks into the 2021 season. The NCAA granted him a 6th year of eligibility in 2019. Then, obviously, they gave everybody another year because of COVID. In 2022, he was finally able to play a full season, appearing in 13 games with 6 starts and earning the Capital One Orange Bowl FWAA Courage Award for his perseverance. He was then granted 8th and 9th years of eligibility ahead of 2023 before transferring to Miami, where he was recruited with Coach Mario Cristobal, who brought him in. He caught 8 passes for 62 yards last season, but had to resubmit his waiver to the ACC for the 9th year this offseason, which was obviously granted. So he will be suiting up in 2024 for his 9th year in college. I mean, it's just insane. And obviously, he says that he has aspirations to go to the NFL, so that's why he's continuing to grind and continuing to do this. And he said if it was somebody else, they probably would have quit, but I'm not a quitter. Just crazy story. A lot of people would have quit, and he has not given up on his dream of playing in the NFL. So, you know, kudos to him and good luck. All right, let's talk some NBA. The Raptors and Pacers pulled off a trade, sending Pascal Siakam to Indiana in exchange for Bruce Brown and 3 first-round picks. This was a very good deal swung by the Indiana Pacers. And, of course, this kind of, you know, changes the era. The Raptors, we know they've kind of been rebuilding. They also recently made a trade, 2 weeks ago or a week prior with the Knicks trading away OG Anunoby. Anunoby for IQ, Emmanuel Quickly, and RJ Barrett, right? So now they get rid of Siakam, and I think he was really the last holdover from that championship team a number of years ago with Kawhi Leonard. So, great pickup for Indiana. I really love what the Pacers have done there. Of course, Tyrese Halliburton has been an absolute stud this year. Rick Carlisle has been a Coach of the Year candidate. I think they're in 7th currently in the East, but this should definitely catapult them to contender status, to top 4, maybe even top 3 in the East. So it's going to be a fun second half to this season. Unfortunately, this week was anything but fun in the NBA. We have some really sad news to report out of Golden State. On Tuesday night, the Golden State Warriors were out at a team dinner ahead of their Wednesday night matchup against the Utah Jazz when Warriors assistant coach Dejan Milojevic, probably not pronouncing that right, he's a Serbian, he suffered a massive heart attack. I don't know when he passed away, whether it was that night or Wednesday, but by Wednesday it was reported that unfortunately he did die. So RIP to, you know, him and his family. It's just condolences all around. Warriors players, coaches, you know, anybody part of that team that was at that dinner, that's going to live with them. They watched, you know, one of their friends, coaches, whatever, pass away in front of them, essentially. That's got to be scary. And he was, again, only 46 years old. Not many people, of course, know of him, being that he was from Serbia, but from what I understand, he was a Serbian basketball legend, both as a player and coach. He was known for his work with big men, most notably Jokic. So he worked with Jokic back in Serbia. So, very, very sad news to report. They postponed that game Wednesday night. Obviously, that was the only move to make. So my condolences to him, to his family, to the Warriors, everybody all around. In other news, Thunder guard Josh Giddey will not face charges in connection to allegations of an inappropriate relationship with a minor. Newport Beach, California police officials said they were not able to corroborate the allegations. Whether the NBA issues some sort of suspension or something of that ilk, I'm not really sure. They took a backseat and were waiting for the police to conclude their investigation. So if that's going to happen now, we don't know, but I'll keep you guys updated if I hear anything. The NBA, they made a welcome change. So listen to this one. They announced in the new collective bargaining agreement that players must play a minimum of 65 games to be eligible for any awards, including, you know, MVP, all NBA teams, etc. They must be on the floor for 20 minutes in at least 65 games. So somebody like Joel Embiid, who won the MVP last year and is a top three favorite to win it again this year, by the way, Sixers played the Nuggets earlier this week. That was a banger. Sixers got the better part of that one. Embiid went off for 40, 10, and 7, while Jokic went off for like 26 and 19. Really good game. So somebody like Embiid, he's already missed 10 games. He's only allowed to miss 7 more the rest of the way, or he's not going to be eligible for MVP. So something to keep in mind. I think it's smart. I don't think guys that don't play in all your team's games, like Jokic plays in every single game. He's always available. I don't think he should lose out to somebody like Embiid who's not playing in as many games. Maybe he plays in more games and the average, his numbers drop a little bit, you know? So, yeah, I'm all for this. Absolutely. Okay, that's pretty much all I've got. I told you guys this was going to be fairly short compared to last week's episode. So, Saturday, that's tomorrow, we've got Houston at Baltimore. That's the Texans on the road in Baltimore. I'm sure the weather is not going to be great there. If you have any, if you plan on placing any bets, I take a lot of rushing props in this one. That's at 4:30 on ESPN. The Ravens were off last week. Obviously, the AFC's number one seed. It's going to be interesting to see if there's any rust there. I'm going to say maybe not. Listen, Lamar Jackson knows it's make or break time. He's had a couple of big time flops in the playoffs, has not been able to get over that hump yet. And there was a lot of talk this past offseason whether they were going to bring him back before signing him to that big time extension. They also are going to get Mark Andrews back. He finally practiced in full. This is key for them. Their stud tight end. And then also they upgraded Dalvin Cook, who they recently picked up a couple weeks ago from the Jets. He's been elevated to their 53-man roster. So they're about to be firing on all cylinders. And again, the Texans, this whole story is great. But again, I'm betting I'm going to do it again. I'm going to bet against them for the second straight week. I don't care. This is the week that it comes to an end, all right? We all know that the Ravens are one of the most tried and true best teams in the conference, right? And I'm banking on John Harbaugh having his team ready. Listen, this could be the year of Harbaugh. Jim won a national championship at Michigan. Could Harbaugh win the Super Bowl for the second time and first since, I think, 2013 when he beat his brother? But I think defensive coordinator Mike McDonald, who is a very hot head coaching commodity right now. I think he has that defense playing at a high level, and I think they will stifle and stymie CJ Stroud. And listen, we can't have a rookie quarterback in the AFC championship game. No, can't happen. We need Lamar Jackson in the AFC championship game against either the Bills or the Chiefs. That's what we want. That's what we need. So give me the Ravens. Also on Saturday, this game on Fox at 8:15, we have Green Bay at San Francisco. Of course, Green Bay's fresh off their upset in Jerry World, and they will look to shock the 49ers and the world once again. However, they are big time. These two games on Saturday are 9.5-point spreads. Ravens favored over Houston by 9.5. San Fran favored over Green Bay by 9.5. And I expect both of those favorites to win. This whole thing with Jordan Love, the Packers, Matt LaFleur, I raved about them earlier in the show. It's been great. But barring something inconceivable, like another Brock Purdy injury, I don't see them losing this game. But even if Brock Purdy goes down, they have a competent Sam Darnold as a backup. And I think they're just going to be way too much firepower for the Packers to overcome. Now, am I going to bet these 9.5-point spreads? I don't think so. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take the over without question in the Baltimore game, provided I get a look-see of the weather. If it's just cold, I have no problem. If it's rainy or snowy, if it's raining or snowing, then I might have to, you know, pull back. But I do like the running props in this one. But yeah, give me Baltimore and give me San Francisco. I think San Francisco is probably going to win the Super Bowl in all likelihood. Then we have two games on Sunday that should be way more competitive. Tampa Bay is fresh off their upset win against the Eagles. They will head to Detroit to take on a Lions team that obviously just broke a 30-year curse. This game will take place at 3 o'clock on NBC on Sunday. And I just think that the Lions are the better team here. I think they're destined. I think the home teams probably win all four of these games. I hate to say that because that's kind of cookie cutter and it probably won't happen, but I think this is where you start to see those home teams get that advantage and kind of move on to the next round. But I do think this will be a closer than 6.5-point spread, or has the potential to be. But I thought this was funny. So Buccaneers head coach Todd Bowles was asked, quite honestly, one of the funniest questions a reporter could ask a head coach. Super embarrassing for this woman. Sorry, but it happened.
Coach, looking forward towards Detroit, the weather has been a factor in some of the playoff games, even for the most prepared teams. Today, it's 13 in Detroit, which doesn't compare to some of the temperatures you tend to talk to. Any special plans to acclimate the team to not only endure, but perform in those kind of frigid temperatures should you face them in Detroit?
You do know we play indoors, right? They got a dome. I don't. No, nothing planned. We're indoors, and we only have to be outside for 20 seconds, getting off the bus, going under the thing. So we'll be okay.
Oh God, this is why women in sports just don't mix. This reporter clearly having no idea that the Lions play in a dome. I mean, wowzers, which I don't know how she wouldn't know that, because the Lions have played in a dome for almost my entire life. So yikes, but I thought that was pretty funny. Then we have KC at Buffalo. That'll be on CBS at 6:30. Patrick Mahomes will play in his first road playoff game as the three-seeded Chiefs head to Buffalo to take on what I think is the hottest team in football right now, the two-seeded Bills. The Bills are going to have home field advantage here. Let's just call it what it is. We saw last week in this Bills game, or Monday with this Bills game, there was a play in the corner of the end zone where Mason Rudolph was trying to throw a touchdown pass. And I want to say it was Pickens or Deontay Johnson. It was not going to be an easy catch by any means, but it was, you know, kind of tough play, dropped. But as the play was happening and as they were diving towards the corner of the end zone, Buffalo fans threw snowballs at the guy. So mark my words when I say they're going to have a home field advantage. And they just got blasted with another snowstorm a couple days ago. So the weather is going to be a factor. I know Kansas City just played in absolutely frigid temperatures, but that was at home. This is a new animal. They've never done this. Mahomes has never played a road playoff game, always been the top seed in the AFC. So, I think what Joe Brady's been doing has been excellent. They finally have a run game for the first time with Josh Allen at quarterback. Unfortunately, though, once again, they will be without Gabe Davis and Taylor Rapp, who got hurt in that final game against Miami in the regular season. But I do still give them the slight edge. I think the Taylor Swift magic runs out, but I think this will be the best game of the weekend. And let's face it, the Bills want revenge. All you have to say is 13 seconds. And it might feel like a lifetime ago, but to them it was just yesterday, when they let the Chiefs score with just 13 seconds left and lost in overtime in that playoff game. So it's a shame, because Josh Allen, man, he seemingly gets bounced out of the playoffs every year right before the AFC Championship game. And this game feels like it could be an AFC Championship game type of atmosphere and everything. But I give the slight edge to the Buffalo Bills. Okay, we have some good NBA games on tonight. You have Philly at Orlando at 7. You have Denver at Boston. That's on ESPN at 7:30. We got a doubleheader on ESPN. And then you've got Brooklyn at the Lakers at 10:30. My Nets, man, they're like 16-24. They're in 11th the 11th seed right now. They're out of the play-in tournament. I'm just over it. Spencer Dinwiddie has the worst field goal shooting percentage in the NBA this year. I don't know what's going on with them, but they're not a fun team to watch right now. But they're playing the Lakers, so you know I'll tune in because I'll be rooting for my Brooklyn Nets to beat the LA Lakers, who are in their own right slumping. And then you have at 8, Phoenix at New Orleans. I don't think that's being broadcast nationally, but that's a good matchup in the West. Also, we've got some golf on this weekend. You've got the American Express tournament taking place. Siwoo Kim and Alex Noren were your leaders last time I checked at 12 under. I think that's really all I've got. Oh, of course, on this date in sports, never forget, right? On this date in sports, what was this? Was this 2002? I forget. The Tuck Rule was born. Take a listen.
Lost the football. It's on the ground. Covered by the Raiders. The
quarterback's arm was going forward. It is an incomplete pass.
Pass to this side. That's complete to Patton. This is the Patriots' season on the line. The kick is away. It is good. On second and 9. Screen pass for Red. Bounces off tackler. Has a first down and more. Brady looks far side. Quick pass. Wigan. First down. Brady over the middle. Bobbled and held on to. Brady quick pass. That one's complete. Brady pumps. Pumps again. Throws. And that's complete for a first down. They give it to Smith. Drives the right side. He's going to get a first down. This is to advance to the AFC Championship game.
So there you have it. That was the Tuck Rule, and that was really the start of the Tom Brady greatness. So, and that was Walt Coleman, I believe, that was the ref in that game. So that's cool as well. That's all I've got. Stay safe, stay warm, and, you know, enjoy this little, if you're a snow person, enjoy it. I'm not such a snow person myself. I'm just going to stay inside all weekend like I did pretty much last weekend when we got snow. Or, you know, what did we get snow? Monday, maybe? Or Tuesday? So, yeah, I'm going to, let's see, play video games, probably play some Call of Duty today, maybe a little Madden, watch some NBA, of course, read my book. I've got a nice streak going of 33 straight days. I'm trying to get a perfect month here. So yeah, that this is the perfect time of the year to just stay cozy, stay warm. Don't go out if you don't have to. Rest, relax, watch a good movie or two. You name it. There's a lot you can do. I don't know how people, you know, get bored when they're stuck inside. I love it. Love it. Well, I'm also not a people person, but anyway. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, enjoy the rest of your weekend, and let's go Lions.